Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast of all podcasts. Everyone loves this podcast. It's the best one. Special little treat tonight, ladies and gents. Special little treat. We got another guest reading from the lovely Nifty Riffic. Thank you, Nifty Riffic, for doing today's reading. Real short chapter. It's only half a page, so it'll probably be a pretty short episode as well. But I'll add one thing that Nifty Riffic is also reading tomorrow's chapter. So we get to enjoy a little bit of a different voice for once. Chapter 9 of Anna Karenina, I asked the question, so how do you think the confrontation went? And also, let's have some general discussion. I am Norwegian, said Alexei Alexandrovich went off script there at the end, in a way that I think proves his genuine love for Anna and his family. He pleaded to her conscience and nothing else, and he did it in the kindest way possible. The confrontation went great from Alexei's side, though Anna's refusal to engage didn't allow them to get very far. Congratulations on finishing your novel, Anna. Oh, thanks. Thank you. Cheers. Appreciate that. Edit. I think you're partly correct that Alexei was thinking that conscience belongs to religion as a way to figure out the right thing to do, which also gives Anna space and her own freedom to reason through the issue. You're right that he's avoiding being controlling, but he's rationalizing himself too far in the opposite direction. Anna wonders if the poor guy is even capable of love. Yeah, I suppose that's the risk, isn't it? When you try to give someone space to make their own decision, if you go too far in that direction, you can seem like you don't care, or you're a bit cold about whatever they do. It doesn't bother you, because you're trying too hard not to sway them in any way. I Am Norwegian continues, but this view is also awfully convenient for a guy that is scared of getting too close to his wife's conscience. I think the fear of getting too close came before the hands-off solution. In this chapter, he got through his fear because he knew he needed to really get to her. Bit of a make-or-break moment, I suppose, for him. Pivotal moment in the relationship. Sluggy with 3 G's said, I remember the first time I read this book, I really didn't empathize with Karenin that much, and while I didn't necessarily think that Anna and Vronsky were justified in their actions, I also didn't really have much sympathy for Karenin's place in all this. The benefit of time and experience made me read this chapter with very different eyes. I really agree with what Tegrific said, in that these two are very ill-suited for each other. We have insights into what they both are thinking about, but they can't seem to communicate what they are feeling to each other. I think this is best demonstrated when Anna thinks he doesn't care, she thought. But people noticed, and that worries him. From the previous chapter, we know that this is not really the case. He may care and worry about what society thinks about it, but it's not that he doesn't care. He just trusts Anna and doesn't see any reason to fall into a jealousy. He is unable to communicate this feeling to Anna, though, and she in turn misinterprets what he is saying. Likewise, Karenin is both unable and unwilling to put himself into Anna's shoes and try and understand her feelings and conscience, which is what she desperately wants and needs, and is exactly what Vronsky can provide her with. We also know that Anna does feel a certain amount of shame and guilt over her actions, and while Karenin speaks honestly and from his heart, she basically just deflects and attempts to turn his words back around on him. He obviously sees and understands this, but instead of trying to get her to open up, he shuts down and sinks into his anger when Anna thinks she both feared he would start talking and she also wanted him to. It feels like another missed opportunity between the two because they are not communicating on the same level here. Karenin is trying to not come across as controlling, but Anna only sees it as him being cold and unloving. Overall, I think this chapter was very sad for both characters. There were moments where they both came so close to reaching an understanding, but the lack of communication only served to push them further apart. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's kind of frustrating to watch, isn't it, from an outsider's perspective, because it seems so simple. But when you're in one of those situations, when you're in a relationship that's under any kind of strain, it's so impossible to see it from an outsider's point of view because you're in it, right? You're in the thick of it. You can't see the forest for the trees. So you can understand why there's this breakdown of communication. It seems so obvious what they need to communicate to each other from an outsider's point of view. But inside, it's very, very different. I was reminded of John 19:5, says Tegrific. Then came Jesus forth, wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate saith unto them, behold the man. Ici homo, behold the man. Alexandrovich really tried in his own manner to engage with his wife. Even Anna wanted him to continue talking. I think the part where he went off script touched something in her. It's complicated. Maybe she also wanted a real confrontation, a dust up of wills and emotions, to really stir the pot of this cold and aloof fellow. As I've said before, they are so ill-suited to one another that only their equal intelligence is a point of reference worth keeping in mind. Their emotional life is so different. He's colder and more distant, and she seems to have repressed her romantic inclination. And Vronsky has ignited a flame that will now not easily be quenched or swayed. Both seem to be scapegoating each other, and there seems to be little hope for them. The old blame game, eh? Swim said the mum of fish. He says, I find it interesting that Tolstoy uses our esteemed senior official's formal name, and his characters also use it. To me, it signifies how closed off he is to others and himself. Yeah, he's an air of officialness, right? Karenin is presented to us as a dry, cold, and analytical, both in life and in love. This chapter showed some cracks in his bridge as he went somewhat off script. It would have been better if the bridge had failed and he had fallen into the abyss, both for him and their marriage. Fun fact, I found Tolstoy hated bureaucrats such as Karenin rejecting their way of transforming the whole of life into equations, rules, and quotas. For Tolstoy, such cold rationality was anti-Russian. He believed that those like Karenin presented not merely romantic failure, but a social threat as well. Yeah, for sure, there's a big theme of that in War and Peace as well. Especially with the different approaches to war, the different generals taking different approaches. The Germans are very, very scientific in their approach to war. It's all about analysis, data, and strategies. And Tolstoy really does seem to despise that about them, where the Russians have a bit more of a passion in there, a bit more... not emotion, but yeah, something like that in their decision making. A bit more humanness in their decision making. It's not just dots and numbers and points and figures. All right. I like this guy. I like Karenin. I feel bad for him. You know, like, he's very official. He's very boring and dry. But that's who he is, you know? Like, that's fine. That's a thing to be, isn't it? still running the Patreon page for the podcast, patreon.com/thehemingwaylist. Still got some subscribers over there doing their part. Thanks very much to those guys who are contributing in that way. If you'd like to contribute to the podcast, you can do it at patreon.com/thehemingwaylist. It goes a long way. It's really very much appreciated. You can do that for as little as $1. So, please do consider that. Yeah, cool. Now, all right. Guest reading. Nifty Riffic, rocking the microphone. Big thanks again to Nifty Riffic. So I'll sign off here and say thanks for listening and enjoy the sweet, soothing tones of Nifty Riffic performing Chapter 10 of Part 2 of Anna Karenina by Leo Tolstoy. Cheers.
Hi everyone, this is Nifty Riffic, and I'm going to read another chapter to you today. I'm reading Chapter 10 of Part 2 of Anna Karenina. It's kind of a short chapter. Today was Labor Day, and so that meant you were obligated to go outside and cook food in 92 degree weather, which I did. I cooked Beyond Beef burgers, and they were really good. And I cooked asparagus, which I burnt, but I ate them anyway because I spent money on it and one shouldn't waste, right? And someone else made brownies, and it was all a jolly good time. All right, so chapter 10 of Anna Karenina, part 2. From that time, a new life began for Karenin and his wife. Nothing particular happened. Anna went into society as before, frequently visiting the Princess Betsy, and she met Vronsky everywhere. Karenin noticed this, but could do nothing. She met all of his efforts to bring about an explanation by presenting an impenetrable wall of merry perplexity. Externally, things seemed as before, but their intimate relations with one another were completely changed. Karenin, strong as he was in his official activities, felt himself powerless here. Like an ox, he waited submissively with bowed head for the pole axe which he felt was raised above him. Each time he began to think about it, he felt that he must try again, that by kindness, tenderness, and persuasion, there was still a hope of saving her and obliging her to bethink herself. Every day he prepared himself to have a talk with her, but each time he began to speak with her, he felt that same spirit of evil and falsehood which had taken possession of her master him also, and he neither said the things he meant to, nor spoke in the tone he had meant to adopt. He spoke involuntarily in his habitual half-bantering tone, which seemed to make fun of those who said such things seriously, and in that tone it was impossible to say what had to be said to her. That's it. Happy Labor Day!